How old are your kids?
11 and 6.
Either of would the 11-year-old derive sufficient benefit from graduation, baccalaureate? Do you think, or is that too young? Or?
He's too young. And I'm glad that he's still too young to understand. Yeah. It's just for me to understand what's better for him to do, but I will try to, I don't know, offer him the chance to make a decision himself later on.
What films have you watched together, and what is he like at this point?
We watched a little bit of Chaplin and a little bit of Buster Keaton.
Of what?
Buster Keaton.
Uh-huh.
I think that, yes, I think it's good to start with the beginning, because if mm-hmm. not, he will never get back to those films.
That's true.
If you, mm-hmm. he's already watching too many, like every children of his age, he's watching too many American cartoons,
yeah,
like animation films, and mm-hmm. they come with a certain rhythm, and of course they like them a lot, but if they get used to this rhythm, it will be very difficult to show them like films from the 50s or 60s or even 70s. They always have this feeling that they are slow, because what they watch today is very fast. Everything is fast. Their computer is fast, and the films are fast, and they live in this very fast mm-hmm. world in the middle of technology. While I think that for somebody to understand cinema, you need to step back a little bit, get some distance, start with the beginning, and understand that there's nothing wrong in slow. Slow is also a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you need some education for slow today.
Mm-hmm. I did the same thing with my kids. We were watching a lot of, not they hated black and white. They never do that, but certainly as much classic, fundamentally profound movies as they would stand. And I think that was for the good mm-hmm. in the long run.
I was talking to Steven Spielberg when we were here in the jury,
mm-hmm.
and he was telling pretty much the same thing. That it was difficult at the beginning to show classical films to his children, but mm. once you have them watch the film, they loved the films and they stayed up to the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of, I don't know, learning how to discover such films.
Mm-hmm. Now I understand that the Dardennes helped you arrange financing for this. How far back do you guys go together? When did you first correspond?
It was for Beyond the Hills. 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
2012. Yeah.
When our French producer, who works very well with the Dardennes and with their company, asked us if we would feel comfortable to do something together.
Mm-hmm.
And for that film, they even gave me some feedback about the screenplay and about, I think, the first edit.
Mm.
For this, so we kept this habit of, I don't know, doing things together, because they have, it's like an homage, if you want, for them, because they have this prestige in Europe. And for this film, because they were shooting at the same time, they didn't read the screenplay. It was just this kind of cooperation that kept on going, because mm-hmm. I think it's respectful. But I think they saw the final result just in the screen. But I think it's still in the classical ideal of realism in cinema, for which they have been masters for a long while.
Your films, of course, are your films and their films are not dissimilar. There's a moralistic element, a spare element. I'm not saying anything profound here. I'm just saying. It seems like you're in the same wheelhouse.
I hope they're not similar. As you know, it's good to have films as differently as you can. I mean, it's one thing to belong to the family of filmmakers that decided to make realistic films, and it's a very different thing to be personal. It's important to find your own way of being personal within this bigger current.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that not only that I'm different from what they do, but that I'm different from the other directors emerging from our region. out of which some also do this kind of realistic cinema. But I think that, you know, there's a voice that you have as a filmmaker which will always be present in your films, whatever you do. If you're an author, there's something about your way of seeing life that would travel always. And I think this is present in your films, even if you don't want it to have it there.
Did you happen to look at the review I wrote?
No, I don't have the time to read press here. We work so much, we don't watch films and we don't...
Right, read reviews. Well, my primary thing is that I felt very taken, very influenced. It reached down and held me, not just in a cinematic sense, but in a ethical, moralistic sense. And it really was, and that's what happens when someone really good is making a film. And again, take my hat off, but you may have deduced from my question that I see a difference between hard and soft corruption. Hard corruption, in my mind, is the more crass and obvious kind. Mm-hmm. You know, money in exchange for favors, police, politicians. Soft corruption, in my mind, is what some people occasionally succumb to. Not as a habit, not as a way of life, but they are afraid of something, they want something, a problem to be reduced and or mitigated, and so they ask for a favor. Mm-hmm. And they don't habitually go back as a life of crime, but this is just what they do. Now, the fascinating thing about your film is that what seems to be a relatively harmless, not odious thing spreads. And that's the fascinating thing about your film.
I think that between hard corruption, big corruption, as you say, and small corruption, is just a difference of quantity. Mm-hmm. But... problem is that it's very difficult to heavily fight strong corruption if you admit this kind of small corruption.
That's true.
You get used to it, and you get used to it up to that point where you discover yourself speaking against corruption and also behaving like this, using this kind of, I don't know, small shortcuts in your everyday life. Of course, there are a lot of explanations and excuses for this, and everybody will always use them because they also come from the fact that things don't go as they should in the society. So you find a way. But what I'm trying to say is that you need to be coherent with the kind of moral speech that you have for your children, because if you want at some point to fight the corruption that you see around you in society, if you're displeased with it and with the society in which you live, you need to start reconsidering the small things that you do to encourage it.
That you do?
To encourage it.
Right.
Because if you keep on, accepting it on this level, saying that this is okay, well, you know, you already place yourself on this other side of things, and it becomes much more complicated to have a coherent speech for your children about what they should do.
You know, it's interesting, you're obviously all Romanians were subjected to horrific rank corruption under the Ceausescu regime, and there are many governments and politicians that are horribly compromised and corrupt. I was just wondering what you thought of the Islamic fundamentalists, because one thing that they say is that they are certainly not corrupt. They may be this or that, but they are pure of heart, pure in terms of their allegiance to Islamist philosophy. Do you have any thoughts about those guys? Because you must have meditated about various levels of compromise and corruption in our world.
Well, It's a good thing not to be corrupt, but at the same time you have to understand that something that comes with civilization is that you need to respect the options of the person sitting next to you. And I come from a country having this background, but somebody knew what the truth is and what's good for people, and they try to impose this by force. I don't believe in this. I think you need to convince people of whatever you think is right, but you can't force them to do anything. It's about being able to find a collective solution that would work for everybody. But I don't believe in this way of imposing your own point of view towards, I don't know, not even to your own community.
Have you ever seen Prince of the City, the Sidney Lumet film? Someday you should watch it, because it's an excellent film about creeping corruption. And there's a very precise speech that about what you said about how a DA says that corruption begins almost imperceptibly at first. You just don't even notice it's happening.
Of course. And for this film, what I was doing, I was trying to understand if you can remember about your own life, if there is a moment zero in your life when you did the first thing that you perceive later on as being corrupt.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do this, but it helps, because you get back later on, and what seemed to be a harmless decision, you understand later on that it carries a lot of consequences. So I imagine that I speak in this film about this parent that tries to make his child avoid that initial moment and tries to raise his child with this idea that he will never have to own anything to anybody and avoid this from the very beginning, because he understood that he didn't avoid this from the very beginning. And once you do this, you enter this, I don't know, circle in which you will always own something to somebody else, and then there's no way out. You will always try to handle things like this in this system.
You know, I mentioned to you 4 years ago, and we were speaking at that party for Beyond the Hills, that in the wake of 432, there wouldn't be a reputable actress in America who wouldn't die to work with you, given your empathy for those two women. And your response was, I just don't think that I can work the way I want to work if I were to make a film with any kind of American system, American actresses. As much as they might want to work with me, I have to work in a way that is, you know, right for my process. Is that partly because you feel that in small, imperceptible ways, the American system would on some level introduce elements of corruption to your process? Is that what you meant?
I don't know how they work. Actually, I project an image which I'm not taking from a direct experience, you know. You can only imagine how people work, but one of the things that I have this, you know, I think about is that normally this is a process involving very many people, and it comes from a process where the producer is the most important decision making in the process. And it's reasonably to believe that if you work with stars in a star-driven system of cinema, the stars will be, you know, the most important persons in the film. They bring the audience, and this gives me to say that probably the goals that we want to reach with our films are not precisely the same. If you want to reach a broad audience, I understand that you will have to work by this plan and respect this, I don't know, this freedom and this importance of the actors, and it's nothing wrong with the system. I want to do something else with my films. I try to present them to as many people as possible, but I don't check the success of my films given the audiences and how much money they made in theaters. For me, it's much more important to use a film to express some important personal ideas about life and eventually change the conscience of some people and encourage them to think about their own decisions in life. So since we have so different goals, I think it's fair enough that as long as I keep on making these small personal films, to work this my way with the kind of actors that understand this way of working, maybe it would be interesting to check this at some point. Because we work with assumptions. I don't know how it would be. Maybe the esteem that I feel from a lot of important American actors would prove enough for us to work a project in common at some point, and I would discover that they are, I don't know, people that could understand this way and could have the same goal with me. But for this, we need to find a project in which I would feel comfortable and at ease, and they would feel comfortable and at ease. Right. And for the moment, we live in very different worlds.
Mm. I love that your young actor's comment that he was mildly irked that you were demanding up to 30 takes. And I love that. That's James Cameron, that's Stanley Kubrick, repeated. And the process, as you explained, please correct me, is that the idea is to break down certain things they're not giving, that they're acting too much, you know. Could you try and explain the...
But it's, yes, it's normal at the beginning. They are very shy and they defend themselves as human beings at the beginning because they are exposed, they are in front of the camera, they are in front of everybody else. It's difficult to, I don't know, share what you feel internally with so many people in front of the camera. So it's normal that at the beginning, you know, there's this shield. And to make them melt this shield, you need to work for a while, you need to give them a lot of courage, they need to trust you. And then there's something else connected with the way I work. I don't do coverage. I don't shoot, like, you know, a lot of
master shots.
Yes, I don't do this. So everything needs to be in place in just one shot, and I make a very complicated choreography so that I have a two shot, and I have a close up, and then I have a general shot just through the movement of the camera. So everything needs to be precise, and therefore the actors need to feel at ease with the situation, with their lines and everything. And there's something else on top. Even if you know precisely what you want to do, if you advance by making just another take and just another take, you will learn more, you as a director also, about that scene. You will notice and learn more about it at the end that you knew at the beginning. You see what works, what doesn't work, you start having better answers, better solutions for the actors. And then for an actor, it's not easy to deliver things perfectly on a 5 minutes shot. Getting back to working with American actors, they are great and I like a lot what they do in films, but you know, for example, this is a very peculiar way of working. Could you deliver everything in place in just one take of 5 minutes and everything should sound the way it should sound? I ask this to my actors. I ask them to do this, and then they need to have the patience of doing as many takes as we need to get it right. Until we get it right, because I don't edit, there's nothing I can do later on in post-production. I need to have it from the shooting. And then after you have it, there's something else. Since you can't alter the scene in post-production, if I want to change the rhythm of the film in post-production, I need to have a variant of each shot which is faster or slower. I need to have it when I shoot. So this is why I'm shooting so much, and I'm explaining to them that now in this moment we might believe it's very good what we do, but maybe later on the tone is not right, maybe we need to have stronger, or it's too long or it's too short, so we make some variants to have it right.
I really like that young man. I thought I felt that I got a sense of him very quickly in the way his responses to the father about this and that. He seemed to be a mature, relatively decent, nice, good guy.
You mean the friend of the girl?
Yes. The story that I passed along in my review, and I'll let you go, is that my father, when he was came back from the war, went back to Rutgers University to get his degree, about to get married and everything. And he failed a course, and he went to the, he wouldn't be able to get his degree without passing this course, and he had to get a job. He had to get, you know, and he begged the instructor that he had, you know, he fought the Japanese in World War II, and he was just pleaded with him to pass him because he could not afford and could not take the course over again. Got down on his knees, and the instructor gave him a pass. That's a little form of corruption. the next time the next person comes to him and says, could you please do me a favor? I'm getting, you know, it's the same thing.
Life is complex.
Life is complicated.
It's not that easy to have the right answers in the right moment.
Yeah. Let me take a shot. Could you look over there?
Sure.
That's a nice... okay. And one where you're looking at me. Okay. Very nice speaking to you again.
Thank you.
I hope you come back to Los Angeles someday.
I might. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. Later in the year, I might. Yes. Right. We'll see. Thank you.
Excellent shot.
Thank you. Thank you.